You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
I don't know if I've ever been happier than at an LCD sound system show, especially like a festival show at the back where there's like room. You can kind of like flail around.
Welcome to Midnight Chats, a podcast of laid-back conversations with leading names in music. In keeping with these informal interviews, each new one is published weekly at midnight. This week's episode is hosted by me, Greg Cochran, from Loud and Quiet magazine. Tonight, my guest on the podcast is Lucy Dacus. For my money, one of the best American songwriters to break through in the past few years. If you're not familiar, Lucy released her debut album, No Burden, when she was just 21 years old back in 2016. 2 years later, she followed that up with Historian, and now she's on the eve of releasing her third album, Home Video, coming to a record store or streaming service near you on the 25th of June 2021. She'll also be familiar to lots of listeners as being one third of Boy Genius, the trio Lucy is part of, along with Phoebe Bridgers and Julianne Baker. I do ask about whether there's going to be more music from them in the podcast. In April, I dialed up Lucy for the conversation you are about to hear. The first time I'd spoken to her since we met around 3 years ago, that was around the release of Historian. There was a lot to get into, not least the roller coaster experience of pandemic lockdown, the daydreams that we've all had around getting back to seeing our favourite artists play live soon, hopefully. Plus, we talk about embarrassing home videos of us as kids, since that's what the new album is called. And we discuss the merits or otherwise of a bunch of old TV shows and movies, including the terrible script in One Tree Hill and the weird CGI baby in the Twilight Saga. This was a really fun one to record, so let's get into the chat. This is episode 106 of Midnight Chats with Lucy Dacus. You are actually the last of the Boy Genius trio to come on our podcast. But I think we've saved the best till last, haven't we? I think we definitely have.
No. There's no best among us.
No.
But you've completed the trifecta.
Yeah. It's lovely to have you on because we have met once before in real life, when meeting up in real life was still a thing.
An option.
Yeah. It was in London a few years ago in the run-up to release of your album Historian. And I really enjoyed the time we spent together because we were hanging out down by the canal in East London and we were chatting all things to come. But also, I suppose we were talking about that you'd had quite a difficult year in 2017, because that was what that album, you know, some of the genesis of that record. So I just wanted to ask and kind of hope that 2018 and 2019, so after we last met, I hope those were good years, right? We'll get on to 2020 in a minute, but how was 2018 and 2019? Were there an improvement?
It's funny because I feel like catching up with friends after the pandemic, it's going to be a similar question, like, oh yeah, how was your 2019 and 2020, like summing up all these years. Yeah. But 2018 was really good, and 2019 was bad.
Oh, no.
To be honest. 2018, though, yeah, like Historian came out. We were touring a lot. Boy Genius happened. 2019, we were still touring a lot. Had a couple tough tours. I had a vocal injury.
Right, right.
That really was terrible. And hopefully I've overcome or figured out how to manage now. But yeah, and I just had some personal life stuff that was really dramatic, some family health kind of things. And yeah, and then obviously 2020 is like a black hole of a year. Where it's like, you know, even now it's like quarantine isn't really over. It still feels like 2020 to me. But I'm optimistic about 2021. I like the idea of everyone kind of just going hog wild in their personal life. Like everyone's like ready to make the changes that should happen. Like it's going to be chaotic, I'm pretty sure, but like I'm optimistic that it's going to be chaos pointed towards like a better life.
Yeah. Do you think everybody's kind of been storing up this like improvement energy, because we've gone through this big pause where there's been a chance to sort of reflect? Maybe people have thought about the things that they don't need in their lives, or the improvements they can make, the things that make them happier. And therefore, as things open up, maybe I'm sounding really optimistic here as well, but as things kind of reopen, that there's almost this sort of renewal moment, like a new you kind of type thing. Do you think that's true? Are you surrounded by that energy, or are you more like British cynicism of like, it's going to be even worse than before?
Oh, I do think it's going to be better than before, but I think you have to. My hope is that instead of like all of us that have lived through this being like more fearful because of it, like all of us extremely grateful and just like approaching life, realizing how much we've missed and being like, I love restaurants, or like, and I appreciate service workers, and I realize how essential food is, and I appreciate farmers, and like, I realize how much my friends mean to me, and so I'm gonna visit them in person. And like, I don't know, I do feel like maybe I'm just saying that because that's how I'm reacting. I'm just like realizing everything that I need to be actively grateful for, like way more often. And I think like being cut off from embodiment, I've been saying this word a lot, and it sounds like one of those words that you learn in yoga and or therapy. But like, I don't know, I've had friends that have lost like family members to COVID and to other things through this year, and they haven't been able to embody their grief. And I mean, there's a reason why for ages and like in every culture, we figured out ceremonies for those sorts of things. So being cut off from ceremony and embodiment, it just shows like how important that type of process is. And so like embodying that grief and also embodying joy are like on my top of to-do list. And I'm not going to be content with like conceptual things as much. I think I'm really going to try to be like seeking out the physicality of life.
What mixture of sort of cathartic energy do you think will come out from some of the first shows you'll either play or witness then after that? Because what you've just described is this sort of like this release of emotions that and experiences that people have gone through, and music is an amazing medium for sort of channeling that, escaping that, sharing that, whatever it might be. So I've just got this picture of like a big crowd, and everybody's just having their sort of own post pandemic moment with whatever the experiences they've just gone through. Can you sort of foresee that?
I will be so surprised if I don't cry like every night. I will be so surprised if it's not just tears and tears and tears. But I mean, I'm still crossing my fingers and knocking on wood that shows can happen in general. Just we announced a tour, and it felt unreal. It felt like just a weird dream. But I don't know. I feel kind of optimistic that they'll actually happen. But we're going to cancel them so fast if we don't feel safe. And I would never want to put like fans in danger, or give the option to fans to put themselves in danger. I mean, I'm going to be crying when I go to shows, and like my friends that are having shows, like imagining just like singing along to them, like I don't know, I'll get emotional just like thinking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all feel the same. We've all been sort of dreaming of like our first post-lockdown restaurant visit or our first post-lockdown gig or meetup or whatever. If you had to be sort of in a room watching a musician play, like who would basically be your dream first gig back, do you think?
LCD Sound System.
Whoa, like, you've gone for the heavy vibes. That's like, on a good day, that's like an emotional roller coaster.
I know. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but you asked the question and I knew the answer just because, like, I don't know if I've ever been happier at a show than at an LCD Sound System show, especially like a festival show at the back where there's like room and you can kind of like flail around. I feel like some of my best memories have been, I've seen them 3 times and all 3 times I felt like high. I felt like just serotonin overload.
There was about, I don't know what the tour, what I mean, I'm sort of reaching back into a bit of hazy memory here, but when they were on tour, once they come back together, maybe it was about 5 years ago when they first came back and started playing those festival shows, the set list was just unreal. I just remember staring at it like afterwards, like having experienced it and just being as you, like I'm completely on the same page with you, like feeling completely just high on what I just witnessed and just like just looking at it, just going, that was like the most perfectly like programmed DJ set, but from one artist. It was like, this is just perfection. It was amazing.
Yeah. So you feel lucky.
Yeah.
Or I feel lucky to have gone to those shows.
Yeah, let's all hope we can get back and witness, like, have an LCD Sound System moment in the not too distant future. Mm-hmm. What happened when, where did you go when everything locked down, and what did you have to do to kind of, to in that moment?
Well, I had been living in Richmond, Virginia, and then like 2 months before lockdown, I moved to Philly. Mm-hmm. And I had never lived anywhere else, and I just wanted to see if I could, and I planned on splitting time because I like to be around my family mm-hmm. in Richmond. But then lockdown happened and I stayed in Philly, and it kind of forced me to have like a separation from Richmond that I didn't even intend, and was honestly pretty painful. And gave me a little bit of an identity crisis, which is probably good for me to not, to realize how much of my identity was wrapped up in my hometown. Mm. And I kind of like fast tracked my actual goal of like kind of figuring out who I am unconnected to a place, or just like knowing that it was possible to build a new life. I don't know, it was really rewarding. And I love Philly and I'm still there. I didn't like really tell anybody that I moved for a really long time.
Right.
And nobody was really asking to hang out because you couldn't hang out anyways. But yeah, I live with like 7 friends in Philly in like a big house. And it made quarantine much easier just having like people milling about all the time, or like even within 7 people, you can have subgroups of 3, and you know, we all have our separate rooms, so you can be like, oh, I haven't seen you in a while, you know, since yesterday dinner time. And we've been watching like crap TV and good TV and movies and cooking. And so my scenario was really lucky. Also, I feel close enough to everyone that we can just talk about having depression. I think maybe all of us have depression and have been able to be like a support system for each other, and it's absurd like how much delayed grief. I've already talked about grief in this podcast. I should get off that topic, but you know, it's meaningful to be around people through grief, and like some days were worse for one of us than others, and just having other people connected to their lives can remind me to connect back to mine when I'm like dissociating.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know, kind of a long answer to your question, but I think, have enjoyed it.
I think it's really interesting that people have effectively had to, I don't know if this is even an expression, but like having like COVID families. Like we all went into quarantine, mm-hmm. into lockdown, depending on what circumstance people were in that moment. I mean, you know, you potentially didn't know these people like that well. If you'd moved there a couple of months before, like it was still in the early stages. But it was like, okay, this situation is happening. We all got to kind of band together because we're going to have to get through this. Like, I mean, maybe and perhaps in years and years to come, like you'll reflect on that and just be like, wow, that was quite an extraordinary moment of 7 people mm-hmm. who were thrown together for this period. And I mean, hopefully you'll still be friends long into the future. But and that happened the world over, people being, you know, what, depending on what circumstance they're in. And it's quite fascinating, almost some kind of social experiment. I'm glad that you all found the situation was positive for you, because obviously it wasn't for everybody. So
we found each other.
Yeah,
we call each other cousins.
Oh, okay.
I feel like when you're with a group of people for a long enough amount of time, you just have like weird, like twice baked jokes and names for each other, and we're like, yeah, we're close enough now that we're just actually cousins. It's so stupid saying it out loud.
Not at all. I was going to ask you about some of your TV watching stuff, because I'd seen something that you tweeted a while back saying that you, I presume this was something you did with your roommates, and that was that you did pilot season, where you watched all the pilot episodes of 9 different series and then ranked them in order to decide which new series you were going to watch together. What on reflection, which shows were as good as you thought they were, and which ones were like, oh, this is much worse than I remember? And what was the eventual winner?
There were a couple top runners,
okay.
And they were Desperate Housewives, which is what we actually chose.
Okay.
It's totally unhinged. Friday Night Lights, which was really good. You know, I don't watch football. I think that, like, the football industry is kind of evil. And, you know, I think sports are cool. But, yeah, I'm not into football. And, or American football, as it were. I actually love soccer/football. Yeah. But, yeah, it's just super well made. The pilot was so engaging and, like, well shot. And the script was really good. It seemed like the acting was really good. We're definitely going to watch that probably next. Mm-hmm. We were all interested in The OC, even though who knows how much of that show has aged well. One of the shows that was so bad was One Tree Hill. I don't know if you ever watched that show, but...
Was One Tree Hill like a sort of almost
so
a
bad.
Bit like The OC, wasn't it? Well, this is a similar era and type of program, isn't it?
Yeah, if you fed the entire script of The OC into like a... like AI generator and wanted a different show, it like spits out One Tree Hill and you have to like squint to try to understand what's going on. And maybe post the pilot, it made more sense, but minutes would pass and I'd be like, wait, nobody said anything that made sense. All it is like people glaring at each other and like these different tropes popping up. Like it just didn't, it was of no interest to any of us. Mm-hmm. And then there were some like middle ground ones like Buffy, Vampire Slayer, okay. I love and have already seen, but it honestly looks so tacky now. Like it, like all of the costuming and the delivery, it's like really campy, and I love campy stuff, but the whole house wasn't into it.
Okay.
What else? There was some... Oh, we watched Vampire Diaries. That was... We'd watched all of the Twilight movies over quarantine. And that was a trip.
Good or bad trip?
Hilarious trip. The third movie, like Breaking Dawn Part 1, is one of the most ridiculous movies I've ever seen. Like, we were just, like, guffawing the whole time. There's, like, the scene where Kristen Stewart's, like, has to drink blood. She's like sipping it out of like a milkshake container. And she's like, it tastes good. We were like, oh my God. And they had like the baby that she has is CGI. Like, why didn't they get a regular baby? Like, they could have simply gotten an actual baby like every other movie. There wasn't anything special about that baby. The baby didn't do anything like magical. It didn't like, it made no sense. Also the fact that like, Jacob the werewolf imprints on the baby, like there, that's just like untouchably weird, like that's like don't put that in front of me. But it was fun, and in a couple of years I'd probably do it again. I'd probably watch all of them because it's just like it's so committed to what it's doing, you know. And I think that's part of the magic of trash TV, is that it only comes across because everyone is so invested in making it happen, even if the idea at its core is stupid.
Yeah, oh, totally.
Yeah.
Because Twilight was like a cultural phenomenon, wasn't it? I mean, I just remember people being obsessed. One of those sort of movie, well, obviously the books and the movie franchise where people would be like sleeping out on the street the night before it came out in the cinemas and stuff like that. I can't mm-hmm. really remember the last time that happened apart from that. Like the Hunger Games, was that similar sort of level yeah. of fandom? I don't know, but like...
Yeah, we also watched that.
Did you? Is that any yeah. good?
It's even better, I think, but it's a little confusing because I think that it's like a confirmation bias type of movie where like if you go in hating the government, you come out hating the government. And if you go in loving the government, you come out loving the government.
Okay.
Like you can read into the resistance as like, you know, being anti-imperialist or anti-colonial or, you know, against classism. Or you can go in being like, hating neoliberal reign or like thinking that the movie is like the logical conclusion of neoliberal politics, which honestly isn't super off base, but I don't know. I couldn't tell what the lesson was supposed to be. And I feel like maybe it was intentionally made to please anybody because it's so political and yet there's not a clear distinction.
Mm. That's interesting. But, like kind of just like just held up a mirror to your own existing beliefs, yeah.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Leesa, the sleep expert. Here at Leesa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Leesa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Leesa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus 2 free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
I wanted to ask a little bit about obviously the new album, Home Video. I wanted to ask in a very kind of... yeah, I suppose in a very kind of literal sense, talking about kind of home video and just like that as a thing, like home videos and like growing up and like and that in respect to our childhoods and like nostalgic memories and things like that. There's basically one video of me when I was really little, which is a classic like VHS home video filmed by my uncle one Christmas. It's just me and my brother singing Christmas carols really badly. The whole thing lasts about 9 minutes. It's been shown every single Christmas for more than 30 years now. And it's the one item that my mum would save from a... if the house was burning down, that's the thing that my mum would go for, this VHS tape. But and it's thoroughly embarrassing. And my mum's shown it to a lot of different people and she's very proud of it. But I wondered if you've got lots of crackly kind of like footage of you when you were little, that anything that you always gets that comes back to.
There are hours and hours and hours of videos of me because my parents got their video camera when I was born. And so you know, they're learning how to use the camera and I'm their subject, you know, like there's videos of me just sleeping and they're like zooming in, focusing, zooming out, refocusing.
There is Lucy sleeping.
And they say, exactly. They'll be like, now she's sleeping. She's still sleeping. And if I move a little bit, they're like, what's she doing? There's tons of videos like that. We use some of them for the music video for Hot and Heavy that came out. Mm-hmm. Just because that source material, which I, to try and put it into perspective physically, like, I think if you lined up all of the videos, it would maybe be like 30 feet of videos. Like, it's so many. And, you know, like, it tapered off towards the end. It went from like the big VHSs to like the smaller ones, like camcorder, and then, you know, smartphones towards my high school age. Mm-hmm. So we don't have any more on the actual VHS.
Yeah.
I was going to say you should digitize that video of you, because when you play them, they tape degrades over mm-hmm. time. So it can, you know, just...
Yeah, we need to digitize it, make sure it doesn't get lost, because yeah, my mum would be heartbroken, but I would be delighted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
On the flip side, I'd be absolutely thrilled if it was just consigned to history's dustbin.
Oh my gosh, then maybe you just don't deal with that.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I like using that stuff because it feels like a thank you to my dad for making all those videos. And you know, I guess he was making them so that they could be watched in the future, but I don't know if he really realized that he was like building my childhood for me. You know, like sometimes I don't know if I have actual memories or I've just seen the videos of them. And I don't really care either way because it happened. I really value rich memories. Mm. And I think that he does too. I also realize, like, I think that he used it as a way to participate in the world. Like he's kind of like a socially anxious guy, and you know, having that camera in front of his face, he could like watch and engage with everything, but through this like creative element. And I resonate with that. Like I understand the world most when I'm translating it into work. And he's a graphic designer, so he doesn't do music, though he always wanted to. I feel like we have a lot of similarities, and I'm also glad that he raised me with a comfort for nostalgia. I feel like some people I know don't have any sort of photos or memories because their parents just like weren't nostalgic people, which isn't good or bad, but I think nostalgia is underrated. I think that like people kind of think that it might be corny or like don't think it has a purpose or it keeps people stuck in the past. But I don't know, the past is really important, and like history is all we have to learn from. And
is there one clip in particular that you just all love watching, or like the you know, the one that you come back to, you just go, oh, that one at Christmas or like a or Thanksgiving or something, like just a moment where you're like, oh, that's a good one. That one always makes us smile.
I really love the ones of my brother, because there's actually less, but he was far more photogenic than me, and he was always trying to perform for people, whereas my parents were always trying to get me to perform, but he was just a ham. But of myself, when I was like 4 or 5, I made my dad like set up the camera to do Lucy's Cowgirl Show. And it was like me in a red cowgirl hat and like tassels with like a lasso. And I'm just sitting like in our living room telling jokes. And they don't make any sense. It's like I'm trying to figure out what humor is in the process of making this stand-up routine, where I'm like, why did the cow cross the road? My dad's like, why? And I'm like, because there was hay on the other side.
I love it. And then they just like fall about laughing. Like, there's nothing better than seeing like a child just like laughing at their own joke, even if it doesn't make any sense. It's like, oh, I'm in, I want to be part of this.
It is really cute. And just, it's funny how like I didn't realize that I was trying to learn, but I like knew that through this camera, I could kind of like have a place to play with this information. Or like there was a time when it snowed a lot in Virginia and there were all these icicles on our front porch. And I did like Lucy's Icicle Show where I like laid them out and I was like being a news reporter, like I was using a microphone and I was trying to figure out basically what journalism is, I guess. And I was like, this icicle, I would just like say facts that weren't true about the different icicles. And I don't know. I'm glad my dad had like patience for that. Like, I don't know. I think I would find it cute, but to like do that for like 4 hours with my kid, I think that I would get bored. Maybe I'm just not as pure as him.
That one sounds brilliant. That sounds really like surreally brilliant as well. Like almost like kind of investigative journalism, you know, with the origins of these icicles. Maybe we'll go out and interview other icicles about this, you know. I wanted to ask you about a few of the different tracks on the record. And we started the podcast by mentioning Boy Genius, and you managed to get into the studio, right, with Phoebe and with Julien to record a couple of tracks on the album. So they contribute to Going, Going, Gong and Please Stay. What was that experience like? Was that a pre-pandemic thing? When did that happen?
Yeah, that was in 2019. Mm-hmm. We recorded most of the album in 2019. Actually, we finished recording around the same time as Phoebe did, but our record's coming out like a full year later. So the day that we recorded on Please Stay and Going, Going, Gone, and Julien Sing a Little on Triple Dog Dare, mm-hmm. as well, was the same day that we did Graceland 2 for Phoebe's record and Favor for Julien's record. And
wow, that's a productive day, isn't it?
I know. We also did I Know the End for Phoebe's record. Yeah, that's just kind of how we roll. I think that we like get that energy of like, we're together, we have to let's do this, like make it happen. There's like this very fast-paced generative energy. So yeah, very productive day. We haven't seen each other since then.
I was going to say, yeah, like, have you managed to, I mean, apart from virtually, like, speak to each other, like, I guess you've not managed to be, it's sad that you haven't been together in person in 18 months or whatever it's been.
Yeah, we FaceTime, like, pretty regularly. I think compared to how much I talk to people, kind of a lot, and also, like, how busy Phoebe and Julien have been, it's, and I'm about to get really busy with this album release, but we make time for each other. Yeah.
Excellent. I mean, it sounds like when you get together, like making a Boy Genius record is quite a swift process. Like judging by the amount that you got done in that session.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the EP we wrote and recorded in 5 days total. So, but yeah, they're good guys.
Good. Would you like to do some more stuff as Boy Genius in the future?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if we will or when we will, and I think a lot of people expect it. Or not expect it, but like would like that to happen. But it's nice that like none of us actually feel pressure to do that, because the EP was kind of an accident. And I think that part of why it went so well is people could tell that it just happened naturally and we were having fun, and it's because we wanted to. It wasn't like somebody in a boardroom's idea. In fact, when we finished the thing, everyone freaked out and we're like, what? Like, do we have time for this? Like, we were kind of like, maybe we threw them for a loop, Matador, for putting out the record. But I really look forward to like all of us touring and me. I said LCD Sound System earlier, but I honestly think that the shows that are going to like wreck me the most are seeing Phoebe and Julien and just being able to like scream at them like from a crowd is gonna feel really good.
Yeah, there's a lovely really sort of natural moment, and I love that you've left in on the record of that the track ends and then there's, you can hear you sort of speaking to each other about the take that you've just done, and then like somebody buzzes in from the like the control room being like, is that the right take? And it's just lovely that you kept that in, because I think it just shows the warmth of like your relationship with each other.
Yeah, and that was a big group actually, like a bunch of singers that I love, like Liza Ann is there, and my friend Allie Thibodeau, who's been my friend for like 15 years, and Mitski was there, my friend Hadley, Dom, who plays bass with me, was there. I think it was maybe like 15 people doing that group vocal, all like shoulder to shoulder. And then the guitarist also in the same room. Harrison from Phoebe's band, Jacob from my band, and my friend Keelan Creech. And then me. Like, it was really all of us in one room with like maybe three mics just kind of like placed around. I think that's my favorite song on the record right now, just because it's like a time capsule of what was possible at that time. Like, I feel so grateful that we got that done in 2019. Yeah, it is precious to me.
Yeah, you'd all be on like Google Meet trying to do that at the moment. Wouldn't be quite the same, would it?
Nope.
I want to ask about Thumbs as well, which is a song on the record that's sort of notorious in its own way, because you performed it live for a couple of years before you actually committed it to tape and released it, and it's so much so like gained so much interest amongst fans that it had its own Twitter account asking when you were going to release it. I love that it was in the foreword for the album, which is written by Catherine Lacey. It's described as a white whale, which is an expression I've never heard before. What a white whale is that? Just something that means that it's like elusive, it's out there. And
I think it's a reference to Herman Melville, Moby Dick, right? And like his whole point of the book is like, find the white whale. And it's funny because people think it's a metaphor for like killing God or like something. But I think that Herman Melville said that it's just about a white whale. But it's like his whole purpose to go kill this whale. Not like people's whole purpose is to go kill Thumbs. But I like, it was out there for a really long time just from playing it live, and I asked for people not to record it and they didn't, which I feel very respected that was how it was. I can't like find it really online. I knew I needed to play it for a while just because it is a heavy, probably the heaviest song that I've written, and it really mattered to me, and it really matters to my friend that it's about, and I just like wanted to be respectful of her and yeah, like not break down on stage. Like maybe some people come to shows to see the band mess up, or like there's that tension of like, oh, you could mess up at any time, but I don't know, you got to carry on in a show. And like I've cried singing that song, but it's gotten a little easier. Yeah, I'm proud of that one.
We talked, when we met before, we talked a lot about your journaling and how that had been a really helpful activity for you throughout the years of noting down your thoughts of things that were happening at the time, and how years down the line it helped you decipher some memories and experiences and versions of yourself. Is that a habit that you've continued on the last few years?
Mm-hmm. A little bit less regimented. Like when I was in high school, I journaled about every single day. Like, even if I was journaling once a week, I would go back the past 7 days and say what I ate and what I wore and how I felt and who did what. So I've allowed myself to skip some things, but I was journaling last night, and actually at the beginning of quarantine, I started typing up my journals from the very beginning, from like age 7. And I got to around 100,000 words and then took a pause. And that was only 4 of 13 journals. So
there's a lot of material.
They take up a full shelf. Wow. Yeah, they take up a full shelf at my house. And instead of, I had only ever flipped around because I wanted to save actually rereading them for later in life, which I guess is now. I think realizing like I'm fully an adult, like I'm out of childhood. So going back and reading about my childhood feels like it's the right time to reflect. But yeah, I think I stopped because I like met my ex that I don't really like in my journals, and I was like, oh no, this is gonna be horrible. But I will continue typing up those eventually.
Final thing I was gonna ask you is a bit about, I suppose, the overlap between historian and home video, because we talked a lot about previously when we met, we talked a lot about journaling and we talked a lot about books and we talked a lot about chronicling and history, and how writing an album, writing a set of songs that then compile together as an album, is a bit like putting a book together in terms of like chapters and separate stories and things like that. So in terms of the overlap between historian and home video, Is the same author, obviously, you being the author. Are these the same characters but different stories? Are these different characters introduced? What's going on there?
This definitely felt the most like a book of short stories. And I would like to be able to hide behind fiction and say, like, oh yeah, I just made all this stuff up. But it's all true, and it's all about people from my life and my past. Mm. And every song kind of has to do with somebody specific, except for Hot and Heavy. I thought I was writing about it, about one friend, but I kind of realized it was about me kind of halfway through writing it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it feels way more personal. Like, I feel like historian, I was thinking conceptually about history and record keeping and kind of like generally about loss. And like, there are songs about my grandma and about certain friends, but I think I was still writing knowing that other people would listen, so I didn't want it to be as personal. Mm. But yeah, these songs feel different in a way that I hope is good, and like people can still relate to them even though they're hyper specific.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Lucy. And
yeah, thank you.
I wish you good
luck.
Yeah, lovely to speak to you. I hope that you do manage to get out on the road later this year, and I also hope that that you manage to finish Desperate Housewives with your roommate and then move on to the OC yeah. and Vampire Diaries and One Tree Hill at the bottom of the pile.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we'll come to you for some TV tips next time.
Cool. Yeah, watch Survivor. That's my tip.
Okay, good.
There's 40 seasons, so if you really want to waste your time, it'll never end. If you hate that feeling of finishing a show, you will maybe never finish Survivor, so there you go.
To find previous episodes of Midnight Chats, simply search your podcast app. Don't forget to hit follow or subscribe to keep up, as they're published every week at midnight. For more information on the music magazine that makes this series, visit loudandquiet.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases, and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.